Welcome to Bouncing Back Stronger, the podcast where we explore the incredible power of you, resilience, personal growth, and triumph over adversity. I'm your host, Sarah Jane Vasquez, and I'm thrilled to have you here. Each week, we'll delve into inspiring personal stories, we'll share practical strategies for growth, and provide valuable insights from my own expert experience and as a trained therapist, hypnotherapist, and mindset coach. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to bounce back stronger than ever before. If you enjoy the show, please press follow. We'd really appreciate your support. Get ready to be inspired, motivated, and equipped with the tools to bounce back stronger than ever before. And if you enjoy the show, please press follow. We'd really appreciate your help and your support here at Bouncing Back Stronger. Now, let's get started. Welcome to Bouncing Back Stronger. In this episode, as part of the Women's Collection, I'm really, really delighted to introduce a lady called Casey Head. She's based in now her new home in California. And Casey is a cancer coach of the Happier Helpful, her company. And the reason she's a cancer coach is, well, Casey, welcome.
Thank you for having me, Sarah. I am a three-time cancer survivor myself. And it was quite a journey.
I'm sure it was, Casey. I'm just so glad to have you here. You know, most of us can only imagine having cancer once. And I think still, even though we know that cancer treatments are really improving all the time, I'd still say that to hear the C word is still a great shock. I haven't been there myself. But recently, one of my family members, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. But she went through her treatment and she rang the bell. And it was a real, real kind of goosebump moment, very emotional moment for us and the rest of the family. So of course, even though perhaps I've not been through it myself, or maybe some of the listeners, I'm sure we know someone who has. But three times, Casey, and you're here, and I'm delighted with that, and you're here to tell your story. So perhaps if you're okay with this, we'll go right the way back. And yeah, tell us how did you find out? Where did this start? What kind of life were you leading beforehand?
So it started when I just turned 31, and I was in the midst of a thriving career. And my husband and I were married about, I think, 2 years at the time. And you know, really contemplating like what's next in our journey together. Mm-hmm. Like, do we start a family? What do we want? What are our goals now? You know,
all of those things you do as a, you know, a newly married couple, and in your early 30s as well. It's all exciting. Is your new adventure together, and you're expected to, and for yourself to do all of those things that everyone else does.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like, the progression of life. And I started to, at the end of 2013, not feel well. And around Christmas time, I ended up feeling some lymph nodes on my neck, and they were swollen. And I was like, oh no, am I going to get strep?
Yeah.
You know, I'm thinking like, I got to nip this in the butt, because January is our fiscal year end where I was working at the time. Mm-hmm. And it's really a push. It's
were
a
you
lot
in
of
finance,
work.
Casey? Is that what you were doing? No.
No. So I was in corporate America. I sold steel. And It was a very masculine driven
Yeah.
environment. It was very, I was working like 50 hours a week, commuting 2 hours every day. I
Highly
wasn't exactly like,
stressful then.
yeah,
Yeah.
very much so. So I
Yeah.
definitely was like, I can't get sick in January. That's our big push. And my bonus depends on what the overall goal of the year. So I went to the ENT, which is ear, nose, throat doctor, and I was like, am I getting strep? And he goes, oh, that's weird. Yeah, that's not right. You shouldn't have lymph nodes like that are swollen. And he goes, we'll give you 10 days of antibiotics. We'll follow up in 2 weeks. And I said, perfect, great. So from the I take the antibiotics, I stop on a Monday, I see him on a Friday. From the time that I stopped the antibiotics to the Friday, everything exploded because what I had was acute. And that means like it's not slowly progressing over time. It's like immediate and it
Okay.
happens all at once. So it literally felt like an explosion was happening inside of my
Like
body.
your throat was almost burning. Like that's,
No, so like it showed up in weird ways. Like I was
Yeah.
getting night sweats. Like I was literally sweating through t-shirts at night. I was getting paler and paler every single day.
Yeah.
I started to see ocular fissures that I found out, like just like little like tin, like sparkly lights
Oh,
in my
really?
eye vision.
Yeah.
I started to get some really intense low back pain, which makes sense because I had a blood cancer, and that's where your blood is produced. The marrow is from your sacrum.
Of
And
course.
so like all these things were happening. I started to bruise very easily. Like I'd bump my hand on like the desk, my desk, and I'd have a giant purple deep bruise. So when I went back on Friday at my lunch, expecting to go back to work, I did not go back to work.
No.
He sent me immediately to an internist that immediately sent me to an ER to get blood work done because they were like, I think the doctor knew something was very wrong but didn't want to panic anyone, myself. And so he was just like, well, if you want the fastest way possible, go to the ER. And in the ER is when they basically told me, we're 99.9% sure this is what you have. And it was acute lymphoblastic leukemia. It's typically a children's disease, which is really rare. And I
Wow.
had it at 31.
And that's a blood cancer. Yeah.
And
Like a
my,
leukemia?
yeah, it is. It's
Yeah.
acute lymphoblastic leukemia.
Right. Okay. Yeah, we have some experience of that in my family with my granddad.
Yeah, it's an it, I had a very aggressive form. We don't do staging in leukemia. We just it is what it is. And I was immediately hospitalized
Were you with anyone
for
when this news was told to you, Casey?
my husband just happened to be he traveled a lot for work and just
Yeah.
happened to be home and he was like, I'm gonna come with you. And I don't know if he knew something was seriously wrong because I was like, oh, I must be just low on iron.
Yeah, or
Take me.
anemic or something like that. We never think of the worst, do we? And you didn't seriously
No.
think it was anything other than something we can just sort out. Yeah,
Right.
especially with the paleness and the bruising and you'd already maybe gone through really, the thought perhaps it was stress strep or something like that. So you're making just those little connections, aren't you?
Right.
Yeah.
Right, Sarah. Like I never thought it would be what it is or was. It never once crossed my mind that it was something this serious. And which is completely ridiculous in hindsight because seeing everything that was happening, I was like, yeah, you are very sick and you just ignored everything. And so I was immediately
I don't
hospitalized.
think you I don't think you'd be alone in that though, Casey. If you weren't to know, you're not to know. And as I said, we don't usually think it's going to be cancer.
Right. I think there's a bit of a denial.
Especially because you're so young as well. I think you tend to say, well, I'm not this, I'm not this, I don't do this, I don't do that. So surely it's explainable.
Right. And the irony was, I was at my healthiest that I'd ever been in my life at that time. I mean, now it's a different level of health, but at what I thought was my healthiest at the time. And so I went into the hospital for 30 days, and they started immediately with chemotherapy. And it was an 18-month protocol that I was put on. Well, 4 months into my treatment, I ended up having a stroke from the treatment itself.
Gosh,
And so I had to.
was that explained to you beforehand that this could be a side effect?
So they make you fill out a giant waiver. So, and all the side effects are listed. So you're like, yeah, okay. But you're not like thinking the reality of like, yeah, that could potentially happen. So I remember actually seeing the stroke as a potential side effect and laughing internally to myself, going, what, a stroke from chemotherapy?
But
Not,
obviously you
you
were
know.
having such intense treatment.
Yeah. The induction phase is so aggressive with the leukemia that I had that you have to be hospitalized for those 30 days. They do not let you do it as an outpatient. It's so aggressive.
And is your chemotherapy treatment at once a day or is it once a week? How did
It
they
was
approach it? Every day?
every day,
Oh my gosh.
basically, different types. I was getting an oral pill and then three different types of chemo cocktailing. Like they map out everything. So the entire month, you know exactly, like on day one, you're doing this, day two, you're doing these two and this, day three, you're doing this 3 day in 3 day, 3 day chemotherapy where it runs continuously. Then day four, you do this, day five, and then day six, you might have a break, but you're so feeling like such garbage already,
Yeah, it
like
must
it
take
doesn't matter.
everything out of you. Especially when I've spoken to people and they've told me how tired and just how sick their treatment made them feel.
Yeah, you think you feel sick when you have the flu, like you don't feel well, but there's a next level of not feeling well. Where you just, everything requires effort from sitting up to going to the bathroom.
And Casey, at that point as well, you're doing all this treatment and you're so sick, and then the stroke. There's not just a physical toll on you, there's also a mental one as well, isn't there? There's got to be, of course.
Oh, 100%. Like,
How did you
you
cope? What
know,
did you say to yourself?
so I really did take it one day at a time. And I think what really helped me was still setting up a schedule for myself, creating a normalcy. And I say that because it was not normal, but I got up every day. I made sure I showered. I made sure I changed my clothes into clean clothes. I made sure that I tried to eat as healthy as I could. I did my best to walk every single day. Like, I literally gave myself things to do because I thought of it as a team sport, right? Like, my oncology team is doing everything that they can to kill my cancer. I have to participate in that as well, which means like I have to physically, mentally, emotionally be doing what I can do as well to be a good team player. And so that really, that shift in my mindset of like, if they're doing everything, I need to be on board too. Really shifted the focus of from victim to being proactive about, okay, well, I know I can get up, I know I can not lay in bed all day, I know I can do these things. And so that gave
Let's
my
do the
brain
things
strength.
I can do and the things I am in control of. And talk about this all the time. You may not be in control of some of the things in your environment, work on the ones you are. It must have been so hard for you, but it is a definite, well, admiration for you because that mind shift to say, okay, come on, you've got to fight this. You've got to fight
100%.
this.
Yeah, like
And I'm
you
sure you
have
did have
to.
those down days, you know, those days where, and I always hear they're the days that you need to fight even more.
Yeah. Like when I had my stroke, it was some of the darkest moments that I've ever had in my life. And because you're so vulnerable, like I lost use of my entire left side. And so that's a different level of vulnerability I never thought I'd be in. Like I couldn't even sit up on my own. And it humbles you in a way that until you've been there, it's hard to explain.
I can only imagine, And I don't know whether this sounds really trivial, but I broke my foot a couple of months ago now, and I'm moaning, I can't do my exercises and I can't do this and I can't do that. But talking to people like yourself or listening to things, and I did say to myself, behave yourself, you've got a foot, you've got a cast on it, you can get around. Just don't think you're really truly grateful for things until they're gone, and certainly in your case, it's a shock.
Right. I agree with you 100%. It is something that I hope no one ever has to go through, ever.
How long, so once you'd had the stroke, and of course you've lost control of your left side, was that your speech as well? Obviously, and your limbs, our arms. Wow. So what? So and at that point as well, you're still having the chemotherapy treatment.
I was not in remission, so I was still getting chemotherapy in the rehab hospital while they were trying to help me recover. And the thing that drove me in those moments that were so dark was because they never said the prognosis of how much would improve. They just kept saying, "We don't know, we don't know."
So even
The
that
thing
not
that
knowing is terrifying, isn't it? Because we all want, in everything that we do, we want an answer, we want a definite yes or no. And the culture that now we have, and I'm sure even it was about 10 years ago, Casey, for you. So everything is still, no, I want it now, I want certain. We don't like uncertainty as human beings. We don't like a lack of control either. We like the familiar. We like the reassurance. And of course, you have your family around you too, don't you? So, were you aware of how they were feeling, or how was that relationship?
It was different. I think that's when things for everyone got, not that they weren't already scary, but really scary as far as like this is going to severely change our lives if she does not progress, like if she stays where she is. And I think the reality of what I was going through became even more evident because not only was I running on fumes because of the chemotherapy that I had already gone through, but now, like, this was another level of how do we get you back to functioning as quickly as possible? Because when you have a stroke, that's the goal, is to re-stimulate that those parts of the brain that connect to the nervous system to make the parts move, right? Like we all think like, hey, pick up this glass of water and drink, but it's like kind of like automatic when we go, I'm thirsty, and you just go and pick it up. Well, when you're like, hey, arm that's not moving, move, and nothing happens, like there's no connection, it's like, where did it go? And like the sheer will of just like going, pinky move, like it required a different set of skills that I didn't know I even had available to myself. And so like that was the goal, was if I want to get out of this rehab hospital, I have to be able to walk at least to get around my house, or they're not going to let me go home. I have to be able to get up and downstairs. So that was like the motivating factor, was if you want to get out of here, you have to figure out a way. And I'm not kidding. There were moments in rehab where it was sheer will. It was like, you are going to move and you're going to cooperate.
I'm sure there was, and it must have been exhausting.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely exhausting, because the mental strength that you need and the will inside you, probably almost like, please, please, will you just do it? And then, of course, the frustration, and I'm guessing anger as well, because I'm sure you'd be getting angry at yourself. Come on, what's up with you? You know, what's wrong with you? You can do it. You know, why are you being, you know, and that bully coming out in you.
Yeah, I mean, there were often times I was bullying myself, like, what's, why can't you just try harder? Like,
But then in a strange way, it's almost like you need the bully too to keep
what?
going, to say, I'm gonna do it. You know, you're not gonna stop me. I'm never gonna give up. I'm not gonna give up on this. And
Right.
of course you did do it. How long did
Yeah,
that take?
so I was in rehab for 8 weeks straight, 5 days a week, 3 hours every single day. And still going through chemo. So and even after that, I would go home, do the exercises they programmed for me on my own. And after the 8 weeks, I continued to keep doing a lot of the things that they had suggested and recommended, because they were like, the more you do it, the more you push yourself, the faster everything's going to come back. And I would say I'm like 98% back to where I was. There are
Well
things like
done.
no, thank you. There's no one like you, Sarah, you would never notice. The average person would never notice, but I know they're very different.
In what way,
And so that's
Casey? What little things do you still notice?
My left side is significantly weaker than my right. Like I'm not talking about like, oh, because my right hand's my dominant side, like significantly, like holding a plate is very different than my left hand. My
Also, the
fingers
fact that
don't
you
always
notice it
cooperate.
more. Yeah, the you notice it. We don't notice, do we, with our, as you said before, we're on autopilot. It's actually in our subconscious. We just do these things with these movements. But if you're noticing something, then of course it brings awareness.
Right. Like, so when I cook, like, I can't always hold the pot with my like left hand. I have to make sure to remember to use my right, because otherwise I'll drop it. And
Or
it's
two
just,
hands.
yeah, right? Like the little things like that you just are conscious of really add up. And like some of my fingers don't cooperate all the time. So
But you are still miles ahead of where you once were.
I would agree.
So you recovered from your stroke well enough. You came home, you carried on with your treatments, you carried on doing the exercises at home. Where did it take you then?
Then, after I finished my protocol almost a year later, and I was like, okay, great, we're done. Like, finally. 7 weeks later, I got the news no one wants to hear. And it was like someone stabbed my heart again. I remember getting the news, and I was at work, I was back at work, and I went into my boss's office, closed the door, and fell to the floor crying, because I didn't want to do it again.
No, you didn't want to go back there. And when you finished your
No.
treatment the first time around, did they say you were clear then, or did they say we're going to do all the tests and that's when you got these results? Or
No, so
no.
they were like, I reached remission, I think, at the end of 2015, in November, I believe it was. And so we still finished the protocol, and they were like, yeah, we're just going to monitor you with blood tests for a while to make sure, and then you're fine. I had a 90, 94%, no, I apologize, 97% cure rate with the protocol that I was on.
So everything, you had no reason to doubt. You had no reason to. Yeah, you've been through the mill, you've been through everything, and yeah, everything was looking really positive. So that must have been, never mind a stab in the dark, just a punch in that gut.
Oh,
Wow.
100%.
Ugh.
And so I went to the hospital because that's what they said. I was at work and they were like, come to the hospital. We have to admit you. And I said, okay. And then I was like, oh, these tests are going to start again. And they basically came into the room. My husband was there at the time. And the oncologist said, so you're not responding to the chemotherapy anymore? And I was like, oh no, what does that mean? And she said, we have two options. We have a clinical trial or an immunotherapy that just came out.
Wow.
And I'm sitting there going, like, that doesn't sound good. Clinical trial? Like, that means like
I'm a
we don't
guinea
have
pig.
options.
Yeah, it could work, it might work, but it might not. You know, we've never done this one before. They're all the connotations you associate, isn't it? However, I can only imagine that in that situation, am I right in thinking you'd just do anything?
Oh, 100%.
Exactly.
So my husband and I were like, okay, well, does the immunotherapy negate us from doing the clinical trial or like,
Which one's
what are our
better?
options? Yeah, right, basically. And she said that no, if you do the immunotherapy, it doesn't negate you from the clinical trial. She said, but so you can do that first, and then we still have that on the back burner. I said, well, I'm going to go the less aggressive route and do the immunotherapy. And unfortunately, it did not work. It actually ended up sending me into a cytokine release storm, which is where your body starts attacking itself from the inside and killing
Oh
yourself.
my gosh.
Yeah. Which is, I
So
didn't know that
is
was a
that like
thing.
your cells are in war with each other? Because obviously you've got your cancer cells. Yeah, but they don't recognize who's who. Is that right? Like they've got no idea who's who should be attacking who. So they're just all attacking each other. How are you feeling? You must be drained.
I was exhausted. Like I was spiking 105 degree fevers for 3 days straight. They
Were you
were
in any pain?
oh, severe pain.
Severe
Like
pain.
I was delusional at that time because I was in and out of consciousness.
Oh my God.
And my husband goes, it was over 3 days. It to me felt like 5 minutes. It was 3 days straight of that. And they were going to admit me into the ICU. And I basically, like, I don't know why they agreed to this, but I begged them not to put me into the ICU. I begged them. I was like, I'll be fine. I don't know what I'm talking about, but I was just like in my mind, I'll be
What made you beg to not go in the ICU?
The ICU is just, it's a different experience. It's intense. You have one nurse typically to a patient. A level of care is a lot more intense. There's a lot more restrictions on who can visit you and who can't.
You were
It
scared.
just meant to me that like it wasn't like I was going downhill.
I'm gonna die if I go there. I
Yeah,
don't want that. Thank you.
that is exactly what was going through my head. And so I don't know why they allowed me to stay, and I came out of these fevers somehow. And then we went, well, what's next? They're like, we're going to get you on the clinical trial. And for a clinical trial, you have to do so much testing, it takes forever. So I'm about to go on this clinical trial, and it got shut down a week before I was supposed to start.
Oh no. So again, all that hope, all that build up, all that testing, you must have been like a pin cushion or felt like one. And then that hope is taken away because they're shut down. Oh, Casey, how did that feel?
I was devastated. I was like, okay, well, is there another one? Like, what's next? There's got to be something somewhere, right? So they were like, there's one other clinical trial going on right now. It's at a different hospital. It's full. We cannot guarantee that even if we get you on the waiting list, that you'll be able to participate. And I said, whoa, what does that mean? They're like, we'll put your name obviously on the waiting list, but there's no line skipping with clinical trials. Like, you just have to basically wait your turn. And I was like, okay, great. But in the meantime, like, what is the plan? And they were like, we're just going to keep you alive with blood and platelets for as long as we can. And I knew, like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, that's not a sustainable way to, like, function. After a while, your body's not going to be able to, like, handle that. Just based on logic, no medical training whatsoever. So I was like, okay, well, can I get out of the hospital? Because I was in the hospital at that point for 68 days. And they were like, I was like, I promise I'll come back whenever you need me to. I go, I just can't be here anymore. I'm going stir crazy. And so they agreed to let me out. And at that time, they were like, we also have this. And they presented like 2 pages of research to us for a different immunotherapy. And they were like, do you want to try this? I'm like, what? You want us to decide, like, if we want to try this? And they're like, read the research. That's all we've got. There's nothing else to Google at that time. And
Oh my
so,
gosh. And also bearing in mind, you've just had one autoimmune therapy that ate you, was eating you alive, was killing you. And then they hand you this wad of research.
It was a study with 111 participants. I remember this. Only, I think, 11 of them had the disease that I had. And I was like, this isn't even for my cancer, and you want me to try this? Like, are we, like, just, I'm like, this
Am I
isn't
pick a
good. This means,
mix?
like, right? Like, you know, and so my husband and I debated back and forth, and I think a couple of days went by, and I finally said, I was like, I will try it. I go, because you know what? Like, number one, if it doesn't work for me, it might work for somebody else. And it might save somebody else down the road. Because, like, they're the options that I had, it wasn't looking great. And I was like, well, if it's gonna be for
You
something,
know,
it's gonna be for something.
out of those 11 people that had what you had, did they have what you had? How was their treatment? Did you get that information?
Only 3 of them survived.
So you're making a decision to go with this therapy. But again, Casey, I guess at that point, and as I said, I'm not in your shoes. I can only say I know what maybe I would do. I'm on a waiting list for another treatment. I've got a teeny weeny chance of this one. Have to do it. Does it boil down to choice? I don't feel like I've got a choice.
You feel like your back's up against a wall, and you know, you literally want to do anything to survive. And so in that moment, I was just like, even if it doesn't work for me, it might work for somebody else. And
That's so humble of you to think that way. So lovely.
so we said, okay, we're gonna try it, but can I go home? And so I got to go home, and they sent a letter of compassion to the FDA and the drug manufacturer just to even get access to it. And we waited. A couple months went by, and we finally got the news that they were going to give us the drugs. And it was like, okay.
What's that like? Waiting and waiting and waiting, and even knowing that you've got something inside you that's killing you every day. Perhaps it's getting worse because you're not having any treatment for it.
It's a very weird place to be, I'm not gonna lie. It felt like you're watching a movie that's not your life a lot of times.
Somebody else, and maybe perhaps that's a way of coping, Casey, to kind of detach yourself from it.
Because they literally sent me home and they go, in the meantime, you should probably settle your affairs. And I was like, what? So I went through Christmas thinking it was going to be my last. And it's a very, very weird place to be.
Can only imagine.
Just to think.
I admire you. And I guess as well, trying to perhaps put on that brave face, and maybe for other people too, because We know they're worried, we know they care for us, and in a weird way, you don't want them to feel sad. So in a weird way, we look after everybody else, even then, even in those situations. Would you say, you know, would you say I'm on the right lines? You know, come on, everybody, come on, it's, come on, I'm fine, I'm okay. And really inside, you're just doing your best. But I think, as you said before, with many things, perhaps we face these challenges, it's a day by day, day by day.
It is.
Yeah, there's another step forward.
Right. And
how's your sleeping and eating in those moments? Your anxiety, was it, did you take up any meditation then? Did you do any journaling then? Did you do anything in particular to help yourself through? Or
I was journaling. I had not yet discovered meditation, and my sleep was, quite frankly, a mixture of just physical exhaustion because my body was so depleted. So it was like, okay, we got nothing in the tank. But then at the same time, my mind wouldn't turn off. So it was a very, it was challenging in regards to, like, I wake up during the middle of the night a lot.
And then could you get back to sleep, or then the mind is ping? And
sometimes, it depended on what was coming up, and just kind of like trying to understand, like, why I was being woken up by myself in the middle of the night with all these thoughts. And
did you make any, like, nutritional changes to your diet, or did you look at any holistic therapies? And I'm only asking that because I do know some people who do, you know, it's okay, well, I've got to do this, and I've read this online, and they say do this, you know.
Honestly, like, I ate as well as I could. Like, I wasn't eating fast food or anything like that. I was trying to eat the nutrients that I needed to eat. I did some holistic things, like acupuncture and things like that, but I did not Google, because every time I Googled, number one, like, there's no information on what the situation I'm in right now, and number two, like, it was a rabbit hole for
And nor do you want to, you know.
Right.
Dr. Google, no thank you.
Right. Not at that time. I needed
that
my
must have
mind
took some
to...
strength though, because curiosity kills the cat to a large degree, doesn't it? It's like, you know, well, oh, I'll just see. So to stay away, you know, nope, I'm going to protect myself here. That's self-care. That's looking after yourself big time.
I had to trust in my gut driving me, and my team were going to put me in the best possible position to succeed, and to have that and put horse blinders on and do what I needed to do and focus on the things that I could do every day. Because, you know, there, when you're in that place, like, there's, you have zero control over bodily functions 90% of the time, let alone life or death. And so I just made sure, I'm like, well, I can't have my mind even thinking any reading statistics. Like, it's just like, I'm not even a statistic right now. Like, most people, once they relapse, they don't make it. Like, that's the statistic. And I'm like, I can't have that in my head. I can't be focusing on the thing that. So I was like, I need to head down and just focus on, like, getting through each day the best way I can.
What was it like then when you got that news? How did you feel?
Oh, we were like, okay, like, relief. Like, there's something.
There's hope.
Yeah. And the goal was for this immunotherapy to get me into remission to then have a stem cell transplant for my brother. And so we were like, how many rounds of this are we doing? We did four. And they're like, you're in remission. We're like, stem cell transplant immediately. So I went and did more chemotherapy, more radiation, even though...
What did the stem cell transplant involve? You said it's from your brother.
So he had to harvest his cells, and then it's basically like an organ transplant, but with blood.
But with blood, wow. Did
So
they
they
have to
wipe
match
out.
and they match the blood? Is that right?
Yeah, so
Yeah,
he's
so
a
he had the
hundred.
same blood type as you.
No, so he has a
Right.
different blood type, but he's 100% donor match because they look at some other things
Yeah.
inside of the blood,
Yeah.
like leukocytes and things like that, that they're looking for that type of match, not necessarily the blood type match. The
Yeah.
DNA is more of what they're looking for. And so we went into a stem cell transplant, and I had it. And 6 months later, I relapsed again. And
Just gonna stop there. Just had a cough a bit, and I've only got that. Hang on. Can we start from where we left off? Sorry, Casey.
And then 6 months later, I relapsed again, and they caught it so early. I wasn't feeling anything because I was going to the doctor or the oncologist still once a week, if not more, to still replenish platelets and blood. So they were constantly doing blood work. And I just was like, what? When I got the news, I felt like I was already being kicked when I was down, and now I felt like I was getting like smashed over with a baseball bat on the floor.
Is
And
it the
that moment,
same cancer? Always the
yeah,
same.
again, it was very aggressive. And I
That little
looked at my
sucker
husband
wasn't
as,
giving up, was it?
no, it was
No.
like, we like being here.
Well, I've got news for you.
Right. And so I looked at my husband in that moment when they told us, and I said, I can't do it. I didn't have it in me. I was already running on fumes. I was already like mentally exhausted, physically, emotionally. Like I was done. Like I was like, I can't do this. And he looked at me and he goes, whatever you decide is what we'll do. Like kind of confused and kind of like, oh, like what? I don't know what it was going through his
Well,
head.
it must have took a toll on him too. You know, he's
Oh,
trying to support you and also support himself.
right. And it, I can't imagine what he had to go through and watch and see.
And yeah, his love, you know, I'm sure he wanted to swap places, and I'm sure he just felt so helpless, and I'm sure if he could give you his blood, I'm sure you had those conversations.
Yeah, like he knew like he couldn't do anything. And that was, I think, the hardest part for him was that there wasn't anything for him to do except to support me and
Watching
take me to
someone
doctor's
he loved,
appointment.
watching someone who you love suffering. So I guess what he could do was the things like take you to the doctors and make sure he was there for you, and perhaps just do those small things that make a difference.
Right, and he did. Like, I mean, I could not have like a like he is like I don't next level caregiver, husband extraordinaire during that time. Like he showed up. He
He
did,
stepped up.
yeah, like he didn't shy away. He was like, okay, what do we need to do? And I think he and I we talk about it now from time to time. He goes, well, you were doing so much. He's like, you were really trying. He's like, if you weren't trying, you'd be different. He's like, but you really tried every step of the way. And he's like, it just made me want to help you even more. So it was like we were again like part of a team. So
We're gonna do this together.
yeah. And I just looked up at him, and I don't know how long I cried, to be honest, as I sat in the office, but the thought that popped into my head that made me want to keep going was, sounds terrible, but your dad would be so disappointed in you if you just gave up.
Your dad.
So I was like, yeah, he popped into my head. Like,
Was he still here?
oh yeah, he was
Yeah.
there every step of the
So
way.
that kind of childhood experience of pleasing dad, making him proud. Yeah, I relate to that a lot. Yeah.
Right.
You always want your
Like
dad to be
something.
proud of you, don't you? So,
Right.
oh, do you know,
Right.
it's so
And like,
emotional.
I know. And like, to just, I was like, he'd be so disappointed in you if you gave up. Like, everyone's doing
Yeah.
everything in their power to help you get to here. And you're just going to give up.
Yeah.
Like, that's
It's like a
like what
pep
woke
talk
me
to
up.
yourself, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to have a
Yeah.
word. You need to get a grip, girl. Yeah.
Right. Like, the reality is, like, what are you talking about? Like, stop doing that. And, you know, I needed that in that moment. And I looked back up and I said, okay, one more time. That's it, though. And I made a deal with the universe in my head. I was like, I'm doing this, but this isn't for me. This is for everyone that got me here. This is for my dad. This is for my husband, Anthony. And this isn't for me. I go, but we're done. We're not doing it again. Like, literally, this is the conversation I had. And I
I'm it's like you're, you know, when we do this, don't we? We're bartering. I'll barter with you, I'll negotiate with you then, but this is in. I'm telling you, and it's also a form of taking control, isn't it? I'll take some control then, and I'm telling you now. Last time, Buster. Yeah, it's amazing. It's
Right.
amazing where
It's
you get the strength
crazy.
from. Yeah.
And so, you know, the team came back in and they were like, we were like, what are we? Okay, so are we doing a stem cell transplant again, or what are we doing? And they're like, we're going to try an immunotherapy, the same immunotherapy that got you into remission again. We have to do anyways to get you to a stem cell transplant. So we're going to do that again. We're going to do the same amount, 4 rounds. So I went through this 4 rounds and they're like, you're in remission again. I'm like, great.
So
Are we
how long
doing a
was
stem
that? A
cell?
couple of weeks or
For a month.
a month?
Month.
Okay,
Total.
right. And you were told then you're in
And
remission again?
yes. And I was like, great. Okay, stem cell transplant. And they're like, we're just going to wait. I'm like, excuse me? They're like, we're just going to wait and see what happens. I'm like, I don't like this plan.
Yeah.
You're just going to wait for it to come back? And they're like, no, we don't know. We're just going to wait
Yeah. Oh my
and see what
gosh.
happens. Like, I lived like that for 6 months.
Yeah,
And
in
every
limbo,
time I
in
went to
complete limbo.
complete limbo, and every time I went to the oncologist, she put her hand on my shoulder and goes, in her thick Russian accent, said, baby girl, we're just lucky you're alive. And I'm like sitting there going, like, every time I go to the doctor every week, like, was it that bad and you guys just didn't tell me? Like,
You're a
what
walking
are we talking
miracle.
about?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I didn't realize like the amount of things that had to happen and coordinate in the universe to even be alive. And
So you are a miracle, Casey.
a little bit, like, I should be dead in all reason and logic
Yeah.
and everything.
Yeah.
There's no, I should.
Yeah. But you're not.
I know, which is
Your strength,
wild.
your determination, your courage, your bravery. And I'm not just saying these things, and I'm not saying them lightly either. What you went through is traumatic, really traumatic. And as I said when we started the conversation, you can only ever imagine having cancer once, maybe twice, not three times.
Right.
So, what about the other things, Casey? Did you lose your hair? Did you lose your, you know? And when we say hair, it's everywhere, isn't it? I believe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I lost my hair everywhere.
Yeah. How was
Multiple
that
times.
for you? Yeah, it's just starting to grow back. And here we go again.
The first time it fell out, like, they had warned me, they were like,
Yeah.
it's probably gonna fall out, and I was like, okay. The reality even of what I was going through didn't hit until the moment it fell out, when I was standing in the
Yeah.
hospital shower with giant
Clumps.
clumps of
Yeah.
hair in my hands. And that's when reality was like, you're sick, you're going through something. And I w it was devastating. Like, and I like my hair. I'm not attached to it even a degree of what some women are. And it for me was even devastating. So it was a huge real a moment of reality hitting me in the face.
So they said we're just going to wait. And that was 6 years ago now.
Yeah. And finally, like after 6 months-ish, I was like, can I go live life? Is this okay? Like kind of asking permission a little bit. And they were like, yeah. I was like, okay, great. But like, how do you go do that after this
After what,
almost
2, 3 years?
four
Four
at that
years of
point?
4 years of cancer treatments, hair loss, emotion, physical stress, stroke. Whoa.
And they basically looked at me and go, I don't know, just like go back to living life. And I was like, excuse me, like I don't know how to
I
do
forgot
that.
how to do that.
Right. Like literally forgot how to
I've been
do it.
living in a state of anxiety for the past, on probably constant fight, flight, freeze. How do I get myself into the zone? So how did you, Casey?
I honestly, it ended up happening. Like I went back to work and all these things, but I had a breakdown. Like I came home from work one day and it broke. I broke something broke inside me, and I started crying on the floor, and I was like, I can't do this. Like I don't know what's wrong with me, but I'm not happy. I'm miserable. I keep thinking I'm gonna die, and like cancer's gonna come back, and I was a mess. And that night that I
And
broke
also,
down.
you probably tried to be so strong for so long to keep it going, to keep positive, to keep battling and battling. You were exhausted mentally and physically, and it possibly just all came to a head. You know those things that, we've been on autopilot. You were on autopilot for 4 years. You detached yourself from the whole situation. And then, of course, afterwards, 6 months down the line, however long it was, for you, up to a year, but it all came booming back, and you then probably felt every single emotion.
Yeah, I was angry. I was confused. I was overwhelmed. I couldn't handle like life anymore in the same capacity. And so that day, though, woke me up to like realizing like you gotta figure this out. Like you're
It's a
not
wake-up
going to make
call.
it if, yeah, like to get my mindset, my emotions under control, because I'd grown up with like, oh, it happened, but okay, stuff it down, don't talk about it again, and keep going. And I was like, I can't just keep going from this. Like I'm breaking from it. And so, and I consider myself a very strong person considering everything that I had gone through. And I was like, I feel like a shell of a human. I don't feel strong at all, even though everyone keeps telling me that. I feel broken and like something was wrong with me because I didn't feel like I was grateful to be alive, but I didn't feel grateful to be alive.
Well, there was the conflict there, though, because were you thinking, oh, yeah, I'm so glad to be alive, I'm grateful for that, and almost, as I can only imagine, but almost like, I should be grateful, I should be thankful, I shouldn't be feeling like this, like that, kind of that cognitive dissonance. One thing saying one thing, the other thing saying the other thing.
Yeah. And it was almost like I was shaming myself for feeling what I was feeling because I'm like, my brain's like sitting there going, you shouldn't feel that
Almost, you selfish thing, you know.
way. Right.
But you're
Like, how
human.
dare you?
But you're
Yeah.
human. And what then you were probably experiencing is PTSD.
Oh, I
Those four
was. I was
years
clinically.
were hell, were traumatic. Did you Before that moment, before that breakdown, had you had any therapy or coaching at all?
So I found a therapist along the way, and we started to kind of talk. And because my treatment, I relapsed and stuff, like we had to put it on pause. So I once I was back in remission, I did go back into therapy. And that was one of the things that I knew I needed more help than that, because she was like, she always gave me that option of like, if you ever need anything, call me. I'll be there. And I was like, okay, great. And that night I called her because I didn't know what else to do. And my husband was like, you need a caller. And she didn't call me back for 2 days. And I was like, okay, I need more help, and it's not gonna be from you. I'm gonna have to figure some of this out on my own. And so I did. Like I'm thankful I did. I dove deep into like research, and I bought every self-help book that I can get my little hands on. I started interviewing people. I went on a healing retreat that I couldn't afford at the time, because I was like, I want to feel grateful. I want to feel what everyone else is telling me I should feel, but I'm not feeling that.
It's like you need to connect back to yourself.
100%.
And talking about it today, actually, that mind, body, and your spirit, bringing them back in alignment together. Because with all the treatments and all the thinking and all the conflict going on, just completely disconnected. And if we're disconnected even within ourselves, we're disconnected from life.
I needed to, which is why I called my book Finding Your Way Back to Heart Center. I needed to find me again. I needed to figure out, like, your life is going to be completely different. Kids are off the table. Every dream and hope that you had is gone. So,
You said kids are off the table there, Casey. Is that due to the treatment that you received?
So we started treatment basically the day that I, like 2 days after I was admitted to the hospital, and the fertility woman came in after I already started chemotherapy. And basically, as soon as she saw that I had started chemotherapy, I could see the look on her face change. And she basically was like, I can't do anything, and walked out of the room. And that was like a reality. I was like, okay, well, we'll deal with that later, kind of, like that can't be dealt with right now. There's more pressing matters. And so after I
But
was done with treatment, I
you didn't know this information. Nobody told you before the chemotherapy started.
No. No one said anything about fertility or, hey, I think I wouldn't have had the chance anyways. I was too sick, but yeah.
I get that. I think it's just the fact that you just had no idea, and
No, I
perhaps
didn't.
the response of that doctor, the reaction from her was another blow.
It was like, I think that was her face saying something, communicating a message that she couldn't verbally say. And because I think she knew the realities of what this meant, and I didn't. And she was trying to not make it worse, I guess, in that moment. But yeah, when it was confirmed, it did feel like I got punched again. Like it wasn't something that I didn't know I wanted it until it was gone.
I think we can all relate to that. You don't know what you've got till it's gone, or That must have took some time to process also.
Yeah, because it's like all these little, that little girl inside of me still who played with dolls her entire life was
And the
like this.
dreams, the dreams that you have as a child, or even when you got married, we spoke in those 2 years, the honeymoon period, the plans and the adventures and the family we'll have together. It's all there, isn't it, in that expectation bubble that we've created or society's created. But
as you and I both know, life doesn't always work out that way.
No. And so that's part of like getting back into alignment with not even know who I am, but like life is so different. What do you want from it?
Almost. So I have got life. How can I make this the best I can? But it takes some time to get there, or it can do. And we're all different, aren't we? We're all so unique, so different. Who knows from one person to another? And you have to find that way yourself. Did you look at other options to have children?
I thought about adoption and I thought about, because I could technically birth a child, it just wouldn't be my DNA. So we did discuss that ad nauseum at times, because it would still be half of my husband. It just wouldn't be half of me. And we both just like this sense of loss that it wasn't both of us, we couldn't get over. And so we both agreed that like if we decide later down the road to adopt, that would be what we would do. And we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But it wasn't something like both of us had that tremendous loss in that moment. And we didn't think that it could be filled with something else, I guess, if that makes sense.
But it's beautiful that you both communicated together, talked about it together, and on the same page.
Yeah,
Pretty special,
that was,
Casey.
yeah, it is. And his reasoning was, well, you just had your body pumped full of a lot of chemicals. And even if I did birth a child, like you still have to have chemicals pumped into your body. He goes, I don't want that for you. He didn't want a chance
Being
like
three
me
and all.
getting sick. Yeah. Doing more damage potentially. Not saying it would, but like even just the thought that it might, it just, I think it scared him, quite honestly.
So I know that you've now moved around quite a few times, and I think
Yeah.
that's part of your I don't want to say road, your road plan or your map, your life plan. But when we first met, you told me that it's now really all about experiences for you.
Yeah. It's funny, like, we sold our house in Chicago and kind of like we're like, we're going on an adventure and figure this out.
I love it. I love that though.
And
I still dream of my little camper van that I'm gonna get one day and just go, that's it. I'm off in my camper van.
right.
My husband thinks I won't cope, but I'll show him.
So every step of the way, every like step forward that I've made, it had me going, wow, it gets to be this good. How much better can it get? And every decision, it keeps getting better. And I'm like, okay, the universe is clearly pushing me this way. I'm just going to lean in and let go and try not to control everything and just allow it to unfold. And, I was like, oh, I'd love to like live close to the ocean. I 8 minute on an 8 minute drive, like it gets to be
Wow,
that
I'm
good.
jealous.
I know, like, and it gets to be that
But
good
these are the
without,
things in your life now that are bringing you joy. These are the
right? Like,
things that you can place in your life that you have control over.
Yeah, and it gets to be that good without waiting for another shoe to drop or living like I don't think that it's ever going to come back. I can't guarantee that, but I don't think about it in that context.
Yeah, it's not there anymore in your, prefrontal cortex, but right there in the
Right.
front. It's not something that you're consciously that's ruling you anymore. Now, and I, we said in the beginning that you're a cancer coach. You run the Happier Helpful, which I told you I just love that title. I'm probably going to say, you know, I became a therapist because I wanted to help people who were like me, you know, had had situations that I'd had. And I can only see that that's what you wanted to do yourself because you've been in those shoes. You know what it's like.
Right.
Yeah.
And so and that is the goal. I was like, if I can help one person, like, that's what I want to do. And, you know, I became certified in trauma and yoga because yoga is, from all the research that's been done, heals PTSD and trauma more effectively than therapy or medication. And so I did all these things selfishly, yes, to heal myself.
Yeah, of course.
But now I teach to all of my clients and the women that want to, you know, feel better and you know, learning how to move your body in menopause and things like I didn't know I was going to be postmenopausal at 35. Like, what? You know, all of these things that they don't really tell you about that you're about to experience afterward. And the challenges of just navigating that, because like all I knew about menopause at 35 was weight gain and hot flashes.
Yeah. The same. Yeah. And that's, you know, hence why I've been speaking to some menopause experts, you know, I'm actually doing a training course.
Or
was doing it, did a small training course on the menopause. When this episode goes back, it's done. But the list of symptoms in perimenopause that we can experience fill 2 pages of A4. We only
need
a handful.
I know.
Amazing.
Like, and every woman goes through menopause and we don't talk about it enough. Because there's a lot of symptoms
it's getting better.
That I didn't
It's getting better.
Right.
But I think in your case, we don't, you know, I think it's getting better in the sense of in your 40s, you'll go through perimenopause and we can have conversations about it now. And menopause is likely for most women hit here. But early menopause, it's not really something that's discussed.
Right. And so, like, I was like, okay, if I gain even a pound and I live 30 years, I'm like, my body can't sustain that. Like, and that's only a pound. Like, you know, I'm like sitting there going, like, I gotta figure out how to exercise and support my postmenopausal body and, like, you know, and get rid of this fear that I'm feeling. Like, oh boy, this is like, it felt like a mountain at times. But it's like, I just chipped away at each one slowly. To figure it out. And
do you feel like, Casey, that now, like, you've beat cancer 3 times, do you ever sit down and think, I can beat anything?
From time to time, I, you know, my ego kind of like is like, well, look at what you did.
Yeah, but I'm not saying from an ego point, I'm saying from, I'm bloody proud of myself here.
You know? Yeah, you know, like, I
so
do
tell you
from
what,
time to time.
This has probably been one of the most kind of heartfelt and emotional podcasts that I've done. You know, it really, you know, you took us on such a journey, and it's just so admirable where you are now and you're helping others now. I'm sure that gives you lots of strength as well, but you're a beacon of hope to those women.
Yeah. And I will say every time that's when the reality hits me is like when I go to my oncologist appointments still, because they never go away.
Yeah.
The reality, like when I'm in the waiting rooms and seeing the sicker people and, you know, in various stages, the reality of like, I'm doing as well as I am despite what I went through is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's when I go. I'm really proud.
Yeah.
Those
I'm
moments.
Really proud of you too.
Yeah.
So, Casey, I will make sure that all your details are in the show notes, including your book title there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, if anybody wants to get in touch with you, if they're listening, they can do, and they can also buy your book. I imagine it's on Amazon.
It is. It's on the Amazon.
And just to end, Casey, someone may be listening to this who has cancer. Somebody may be listening to this who has a family member with cancer. Perhaps a little different, but is there any real big takeaway that you would, out of all of this, we've discussed so much and there's so much they'll take away, and me, someone without cancer, but what's this one piece that you could leave them with?
Never lose hope, because as long as you're alive and as long as there's options available, never lose hope, ever, because you don't know what is going to come available as well in the time that you're still here.
Yeah.
And I say that because they're approving cancer drugs at a rapid rate now.
Yeah.
Because of the investments that they've made. And, you know, that's what I kind of thought in the last time I relapsed, was like, if you're just alive for the next thing, that's all you need to do, which is that hope.
Yeah. Yeah. And hope is very powerful, isn't it?
It's the best drug you can have.
Casey, thank you so much. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I got so much from that, and I'm sure the listeners did too. You make sure that you stay in touch with me now, won't you?
I will. Thank you for having me, Sarah. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of Bounce It Back Stronger. I hope you've taken lots from this today, either for you or for somebody else. If you'd like to come on the show, you have a personal story, or perhaps you're an expert in a particular field, then please get in touch. You may even wish to work with me on all things linked to changing your beliefs and your behaviours. You'll find all my links in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thank you.